Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 354, titled Forward into the Past, Part 3. I'm going to be deferring a continuation of discussion about deep conspiracy theory, so to speak, and September 11th and related matters begun last week until next week, because a lot of information has come out this past week, either in periodicals or books, that I want to get out to the audience. This is being recorded on April 7th of 2002, and let me preface what I'm about to say by encouraging listeners to utilize not only the Spitfire website equipped with real audio, but also the Spitfire program descriptions, meticulously detailed and annotated, and also two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM, which have virtually the entire For the Record series available on real audio. All of this information is free. I want to encourage people who are online to disseminate it as far and wide as possible, and I want to encourage people who are online to make a word database of the program descriptions so that they can do word searches. Now, having said that, this program is a sequel. Not only is it going to continue some of the discussion of the events in and around September 11th, but it is a sequel to For the Record Program 333, Forward into the Past, Part 1, and For the Record 352, Forward into the Past, Part 2. We're going to be dealing with a number of institutions and individuals that we've spoken about in the past. Due to the limitations of time, I'm going to refer listeners to other broadcasts dealing with some of these subjects. We're going to be talking about Ahmed Huber. A very important recent article by Kevin Coogan in a music publication is about Ahmed Huber. We're also going to be talking about related subjects, namely Al-Taqwa Management, Youssef Nada, François Genoux, one of the most important Third Reich operatives both during the Third Reich's above-ground period and its post-war underground period. And we're going to be connecting up some of the elements of the Bin Laden family with the milieu of François Genoux. And we're also going to be taking a look at some of the very interesting doings of the Bin Laden organization. And we're going to even jump back to 1980, to the October surprise. We're going to be taking a look at the alleged involvement of Salem Bin Laden in the so-called October surprise. That is the machinations that were achieved between the Reagan-Bush campaign and the Khomeini forces in Iran, almost certainly predating the election campaign. But this gambit prolonged the holding of the U.S. hostages taken from the U.S. embassy in Iran until after Jimmy Carter's humiliation and consequent election defeat were assured. We're going to be accessing, for much of the first side, a very important article about Ahmed Huber, Al-Taqwa, François Genoux, and in particular, we're going to be highlighting some of the Iranian connections to the milieu of Ahmed Huber. Now, many of Huber's connections go to the Sunni Muslim sect, such as the Wahhabis of Saudi Arabia, and elements of the Bin Laden milieu. Huber has very, very important connections, perhaps even more important, to the milieu of the Shiites in Iran. We have noted a number of allegations maintained in various quarters that, in fact, Al-Qaeda fighters and the Al-Qaeda organization, as well as Yasser Arafat recently, have been getting support from Iran. This would indicate sort of a pan-Islamist front, and it is a front that I believe could be properly called Islamo-fascist. And again, this is not to confuse Islam with fascism, but there's a powerful element within Islam that is a form of theocratic fascism allied with world fascism. We've spoken about that many times in the past. The following article, which I'm going to read in its entirety, is from a music publication called Hit List. This is from Hit List's issue of April and May of 2002. This article is by Kevin Coogan, the author of the encyclopedic Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Post-War Fascist International. I've accessed that book many times in the past, and I've also interviewed Kevin Coogan. Book published in softcover by Artano Media, copyright 1999. And this is not to be my use of Kevin's material, should not be misinterpreted as an endorsement by Kevin Coogan of the working hypothesis that I've been presenting on September 11th. This publication, or this article rather, from Hit List reads as follows. It's titled, The Mysterious Ahmed Huber, Friend to Hitler, Allah, and Bin Laden. This is again from Hit List, issue of April and May of 2002. On November 7th of 2001, the U.S. government's Office of the Coordinator of Counterterrorism issued a list of some 62 organizations and individuals suspected of involvement in terrorist organizations, in particular Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda network. Number 56 on the list was Ahmed Albert Friedrich Armand Huber, a former Swiss journalist with close ties both to Islamic fundamentalists and far-right extremists. A longtime convert to Islam, the 74-year-old Huber was cited by the government for his presence on the five-man managing committee of NADA Management, a Lugano-based financial institution which was known as Al-Taqwa Fear of God Management prior to March of 2001. Al-Taqwa was specifically placed on the list due to suspicions that it may have played a key role in laundering money for bin Laden. A few hours before the official announcement from Washington, police officials raided Al-Taqwa's offices in Switzerland and Liechtenstein, as well as Huber's home in Muri, M-U-R-I, a suburb of Bern, and the homes of Youssef Nada and Ali Ghalib Himat, two other Al-Taqwa directors who were also on the U.S. list. Al-Taqwa's accounts were frozen as well, and a few weeks later, on November 29th, Italian investigators shut down a Milan-based Islamic cultural center suspected of being Al-Qaeda's logistical center for European operations. The center's key financial supporter, Ahmed Idris Nasser al-Din, a wealthy businessman and Kuwait's former honorary consul in Milan, was yet another Al-Taqwa director. Finally, in early January of 2002, Al-Taqwa announced that it was closing its doors for good. The closing of Al-Taqwa's doors, however, has done little to eliminate interest in Huber's own ties to Islamic extremism. Shortly after September 11th, Huber himself drew attention to a possible Al-Taqwa link to bin Laden when he stated that while attending an Islamic conference in Beirut, he had encountered some of bin Laden's cadre, whom he described as, quote, very discreet, well-educated, highly intelligent people, an entirely different quality than earlier, unquote. By the way, I would add that in a San Francisco Chronicle article from March 12th of 2002 and from a Newsweek magazine article which came out the following week, there was added weight to the allegations that Al-Taqwa has in fact been involved with Al-Qaeda, including allegations from the Treasury Department discussed in the Newsweek article that in fact Al-Taqwa had been involved with Al-Qaeda after September 11th. I've noted in the past connections, the profound connections between the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Taqwa. Later on in this broadcast, on the second side, we're going to talk about some Muslim Brotherhood connections to Osama bin Laden and to his brother, Maruz. Continuing now with Kevin Coogan's article about Ahmed Huber from Hit List, April-May of 2002. Huber also described 9/11 as an act of counter-terror, unquote, against the World Trade Center, a tower of godlessness, unquote, and the Pentagon, a symbol of Satan, unquote. However, he denied having any financial dealings with bin Laden. Huber stressed that Al-Taqwa was strictly involved in financing development projects in third world countries. In a September 20th, 2001 interview with the Swiss publication Facts, Huber claimed that attempts to link Al-Taqwa to bin Laden were, quote, an invention of the Mossad, unquote. To those familiar with Huber, his statements regarding September 11th were hardly surprising. Born in Freiburg, Switzerland, to Protestant parents in 1927, Huber's penchant for political extremism began in the late 1950s, when, as a member of the Swiss Socialist Party, he helped shelter a group of Muslims who had come to Switzerland to buy weapons for the Algerian struggle against French rule. Huber was so impressed by his conversations with them that he began studying Islam. He then made Shahada, the profession of faith in Islam, at an Islamic center in Geneva founded by the Muslim Brotherhood. Huber, however, was warned by Fatih al-Dib, Egypt's then ambassador to Switzerland, whose secretary Huber would later marry, that the Nasser government was hostile to the Muslim Brotherhood. He recommended that Huber make a second Shahada in Egypt, which Huber did in February of 1962 at Cairo's famous Al-Azhar University. After spending more time in the Middle East, Huber abandoned his earlier pro-Israeli views with a vengeance. He told the French investigative journalist Pierre Payen that in 1965 he began to accept the views of the Egyptian-based Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haji Amin al-Husseini, who gave Huber a, quote, totally different version, unquote, of the history and nature of the Third Reich. The Grand Mufti knew Hitler personally and actively collaborated with the Axis powers in World War II. The Mufti was even responsible for creating the Bosnian-based 13 Waffen-SS division that was composed of Muslim recruits. Huber further told Payen that, while he was in Egypt, he also grew close to Johann von Leers, a fanatical Jew-hater, former Nazi propaganda ministry official, and the Grand Mufti's good friend. Leers had relocated to Egypt in the mid-1950s, where he converted to Islam and changed his name to Umar Amin von Leers. He remained in Cairo until his death in 1965, helping to direct Nasser's propaganda apparatus, which regularly churned out Nazi-like, anti-Semitic propaganda throughout the Arab world. Back in Switzerland, Huber next became close friends with the Swiss banker François Genoux, whom Huber recalls first meeting in, quote, pro-Arab associations, unquote. Best known for funding SS butcher Klaus Barbie's legal defense team, Genoux held the legal copyright to writings by Hitler, Goebbels, and Martin Bormann. Genoux, who committed suicide in 1996, is also believed to have played a role in the post-war management of Nazi funds. In the late 1960s, he also worked closely with radical Palestinian groups, particularly the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, or PFLP. Along with organizing legal support for captured PFLP militants, he even helped coordinate the PFLP's hijacking of a Lufthansa Boeing 747 en route from Delhi to Aden. Through his ties to the PFLP's leader, Dr. Wadi Haddad, who affectionately dubbed him Sheikh François, Genoux befriended Ilich Ramirez Sanchez, better known as Carlos the Jackal. Both men remained in close contact right up to Genoux's death. By the way, note here the connections between Genoux and Dr. Wadi Haddad of the PFLP. We've taken a look at George and Fouad Habash, connected to the PFLP in past discussions. We're going to note a Al-Qaeda slash Wadi Haddad connection a little later in the broadcast. Continuing with Kevin Coogan's article from Hit List of April and May of 2002. At the same time that Genoux was developing close ties to the leftist PFLP, Huber was actively promoting pro-Arab views inside the Swiss left. While working as a social democratic journalist whose beat was the Swiss parliament, he became involved with the Bern Nonconformists, unquote. The Nonconformists were a mix of 1960s counterculture activists, poets, painters, and new leftists. Inside the Nonconformists, Huber used leftist rhetoric to push an anti-American, anti-Israeli, and strongly neutralist line. In the 1970s, however, he found it increasingly difficult to operate inside the left. The Swiss Socialist Party expelled Huber in 1994 for Khomeinism, anti-feminism, and contact with radical rightists, unquote. Huber's statements regarding September 11th reflect a broader consensus inside the far right. They also echo the remarks of his friend Horst Mahler, a former leader of the far-left terrorist group the Rote Armee Fraction, or RAF, Red Army Faction, also known as the Baader-Meinhof Gang, who is today a leading spokesman for the far-right National Demokratische Partei Deutschlands, or the NPD, National Democratic Party of Germany. By the way, in For the Record program 333, we took a look at Horst Mahler, the NPD, the Baader-Meinhof Gang, and their ties to François Genoux. Shortly after the World Trade Center attack, Mahler issued a statement entitled, Independence Day Live, unquote. In it, he argued that September 11th marked the end of the American century, the end of global capitalism, and with it the end of the secular Yahweh cult of Mammonism, unquote. Huber is also a popular speaker at NPD events. In October of 2000, for example, he addressed the 7th European Congress of the NPD's youth organization, the Junge National Demokraten, or the JN, the Young National Democrats, on the topic Islam and the New Right. On September 8, 2001, a few days before the World Trade Center attack, he lectured on Israel and the Muslim World, unquote, to another NPD-sponsored gathering in Saxony that attracted well over 1,000 radical rightists. The September issue of the NPD publication Deutsche Stimme also carried a lengthy interview with Huber, conducted before 9/11, in which he praised the Bush administration for not having any, quote, Jewish Zionist advisors. Quote, "That's very important for us," he remarked. Huber's friendly feelings toward George Jr. changed radically after he was publicly identified as a potential terrorist supporter. Quote, "It is for me an honor," he told the press, "to be put on the list from the USA gangster regime," unquote. While until now, there has been no smoking gun directly linking Al-Taqwa to bin Laden, what is clear is that Al-Taqwa is far from an ordinary financial institution, even without Huber's presence on its board. By the way, I would add that this article was completed in mid-February, and there have since been two articles again, March 12, 2002, San Francisco Chronicle, and also an article in Newsweek magazine the following week, both of which were accessed in For the Record 352, which further cement the allegations about Al-Taqwa and Al-Qaeda. Returning to Kevin Coogan's article, Al-Taqwa has served for years as a key financial institution for the Muslim Brotherhood. Founded in Egypt in the late 1920s by Hassan al-Banna, the Muslim Brotherhood has fought for over 70 years for the formation of a pure pan-Islamic theocratic state. Youssef Nada and Ali Ghalib Himmat, the two Al-Taqwa directors cited along with Huber on the U.S. list, are acknowledged longtime brothers. According to the German news weekly Der Spiegel, Himmat is also the president of the Bavaria-based Islamische Gesellschaft Deutschland, or IGD, Islamic Society of Germany, an organization founded by the Muslim Brotherhood that German authorities consider to be an ideological breeding ground for Islamic extremists. Himmat also serves as a director of the Geneva branch of the International Islamic Charitable Organization, or IICO, headquartered in Kuwait. Another IICO director, the Qatar-based Youssef Al-Qardawi, is president of Al-Taqwa's Council of Religious Advisors that ensures that the bank does not violate any teachings of the Quran. Qardawi, a fiery speaker who is considered one of the Muslim Brotherhood's top spiritual leaders, is also an open supporter of the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas. He even issued a fatwa declaring Hamas suicide bombers to be martyrs and their acts to be, quote, the highest form of jihad, unquote. Al-Taqwa's financial involvement with Hamas became known after a 1997 scandal involving the disappearance of a large part of Hamas's treasury led to an internal investigation by Hamas that included a careful examination of Al-Taqwa's role in the affair. Inside the Middle East, Egypt has been the most vigorous opponent of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Egyptian government has been at war with the Brotherhood since the early 1950s, when then-Egyptian President Gamal Abdel al-Nasser banned the group and arrested many of its leaders. As an organization committed to the establishment of a pan-Islamic state, the Muslim Brotherhood bitterly opposed Nasser's secular form of pan-Arab nationalism. The Brotherhood's staunch opposition to secular nationalism has also attracted financial support, particularly from Saudi Arabia. Saudi funds have also flowed into Al-Taqwa's coffers. Hubert himself even boasted about Al-Taqwa's Saudi connection to Swiss journalist Richard Labeyrière. Asked by Labeyrière about Al-Taqwa's finances, Hubert replied, quote, "As for the money, I cannot give details except for Saudi Arabia, because that will change the bad perception people have of this country. Of course, the government is under American surveillance, but the kingdom has the great advantage of being a feudal state that leaves the great families total freedom to manage their oil funds as they wish. That's great, and today the Saudis are very active. The details of their funds that come to the bank are a matter of bank secrecy." skipping down. Even if one accepts the notion that al-Taqwa may have the same highly ambiguous relationship to Islamist terror as the Muslim Brotherhood itself, there can be little doubt about Huber's involvement with a highly visible terrorist regime. While Huber has been working closely with the Sunni wing of Islam, represented by the Muslim Brotherhood and al-Taqwa, he also has been a leading supporter of the Shiite fundamentalist regime that took power in Iran in 1979 under the leadership of the Ayatollah Khomeini. Since then, Iran has sponsored countless acts of terrorism, including the Iranian-backed Hezbollah movement's destruction of the U.S. embassy in Lebanon, and, it would appear, the subsequent bombing of Israel's embassy in Argentina. Iran's continuing use of violence led the U.S. State Department to identify Iran as, quote, the most active state sponsor of terrorism in 2000, unquote. Huber's own ties to Iran are hardly secret. In 1989, amid a flurry of publicity, he lost his journalistic position with the Swiss press group Rangier after he openly supported Iran's fatwa condemning Salman Rushdie to death for his book The Satanic Verses. Huber's services to Iran are so highly valued that he is reportedly the only European Muslim ever to give a speech before the tomb of Imam Khomeini. Iran has also given political sanctuary to Huber's comrades in the Holocaust denial movement, and Radio Tehran regularly broadcasts interviews with Holocaust revisionists, unquote. Huber is also a prominent speaker at Iranian-allied Islamic gatherings across the world, including America. He even explained how easy it was for him to visit the U.S. undetected, quote, because I was registered in all the CIA computers as Ahmed, but my passport still remains Albert. I can enter and exit the USA without any problem, unquote. Huber has presented talks to pro-Khomeini groups like the Persian Speaking Group of the Muslim Students Association, or MSA, at the 27th MSA convention held in Chicago in December of 1997, for example, Huber spoke on Islam at two panels with Imam Abdul Alim Musa and Sheikh Mohammed Al-Asi, both of whom are associated with the pro-Khomeini Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, or ICIT. Huber also appeared with both men earlier at another pro-Khomeini conference organized by the Muslim Parliament, or MP, which was held in London in November of 1996, and which advertised participation by representatives from both Hezbollah and Hamas. Even as Huber plays a major role in Islamist networks, he remains highly active inside Europe's far-right elite. Along with a poster of Imam Khomeini and a framed quote from Hitler denouncing modern art, Huber's house contains a photo of his friend Jörg Haider, Austria's leading electoral rightist. By the way, I would note that in an article from the March 5th, 2002 Financial Times of London, we noted that Jörg Haider was seriously considering converting to Islam. And note here that he and Huber are good friends. But Huber's most eye-opening picture displays both himself and Janu at a meeting in Spain with Leon de Grelle, a Waffen-SS general whom Hitler once said he wanted to adopt as a son. De Grelle, who lives in Spain in order to escape war crimes charges in his native Belgium, was a top leader of the post-war ultra-right. Inside Switzerland, Huber helps direct the Avalon Gemeinschaft, or Avalon Society, an elite far-right group whose members include former Waffen-SS volunteers. Each year, Avalon's cadre retire to the woods during the summer solstice and conduct ritual celebrations of Europe's pagan past. Jörg Frischknecht, a leading expert on the Swiss far-right, reports that Avalon, using the cover name Studiengruppe für Geschichte, History Study Group, regularly sponsors lectures from leading Holocaust deniers such as France's Robert Faurisson, which are held at four-star hotels in Bern. Huber has also worked tirelessly to forge alliances between European rightists and Islamists, telling his fellow Europeans that their, quote, enemies are not the Turks, but rather the German and American politicians with an American brain, unquote. Huber hopes to establish an alliance between the anti-immigration European right and the Islamists based on the understanding that once Islamist parties take power, large-scale Muslim emigration to the West would end. Huber even organized a meeting between Jean-Marie Le Pen, head of France's largest national populist party, the Front National, and Huber's close friend Necmettin Erbakan, the head of the now-banned Turkish Islamist party, RIFA, to develop a joint position on immigration. In order to promote close ties between the Euro-right and Islam, Huber regularly points out to his rightist comrades that the Arabs were some of Nazi Germany's strongest supporters, and indeed remain so to this day. In his September 2001 interview in Deutsche Stimme, for example, Huber proudly reported that at a large Palestinian Congress held in Tehran, Iran's supreme religious leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, publicly rejected claims by Zionists and Marxists, unquote, concerning German war crimes. Ayatollah Khomeini then stated that Muslims saw Germany differently, both because the Nazis fought against colonial powers like England, France, Belgium, and Holland, and also, quote, because the Third Reich, in the view of Muslims, contained some interesting Islamic elements, unquote, by which Khomeini was almost certainly referring to the Grand Mufti's role in World War I. Huber has also tried to establish direct organizational links between the U.S. European-based Holocaust revisionists and their Arab allies. Earlier this year, Huber and three of his closest collaborators, the NPD's Horst Mahler, Jürgen Graf, a leading Swiss Holocaust denier who fled to Iran to avoid serving a 15-month jail sentence for his activities, and the Swedish-based Ahmed Rami, a former Moroccan military officer who in 1987 founded Radio Islam to disseminate anti-Semitic Holocaust denial and pro-Nazi propaganda, teamed up with the California-based Institute for Historical Review, or IHR, the world's leading Holocaust denial organization, to organize an IHR-sponsored conference that was scheduled to take place in late March in a Hezbollah-controlled section of Beirut, Lebanon. Protests from Jewish groups, however, eventually forced the Lebanese government to ban the proposed gathering. Looking back on Huber's career, it seems clear that he has been most concerned with finding allies in the Muslim world to help him wage war against both Israel and the West. From the late 1950s until the 1970s, he publicly cast his lot with secular pan-Arabists like Nasser. In the wake of Egypt's military defeats in both the 1967 and 1973 Arab-Israeli wars, and after Nasser's successor, Anwar Sadat, signed a peace accord with Israel, Huber discovered an even more virulent form of anti-Western fanaticism in Iran. In 1982, he wrote an essay for a book entitled Der Unbekannte Islam that still serves to define his political views today. In it, Huber identifies the triple aggression that he sees directed against Islam. The first aggression, naturally, is Zionism, whereas the second is Marxism, which Huber condemns both for the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and for its corruption of Islamic intellectuals. He then identifies the third and final aggression as the American way of life, which many Muslims have felt as specifically New Yorkish and thus essentially Jewish, unquote. Clearly, Huber is convinced that the New Yorkish American way of life is destroying Islam. Now, it is the task of investigators in both America and Europe to determine whether or not Huber and his friends in Al-Taqwa have used Islam, unquote, to destroy both New York and the American way of life. And inside two of this broadcast, we're going to access a couple of footnotes from Kevin Coogan's article and develop some of this information further. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program number 354, Forward into the Past, Part 3. This is being recorded on April 7th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.